Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotoyou.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to a very belated episode 110 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line, once again, from Melbourne via Skype, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you, mate?
I think you're getting a little out of practice, young man.
I think I am.
I've aged considerably since we last spoke. I hope it's all right. Yeah. Do they still make those things that take pictures, you know? Yeah, they were fun in that day.
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. How you doing?
Flat out like a lizard drinking.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's nice to be back. Nice to be back in Shutters Inc. land.
Absolutely.
After an absence. Now, listen, folks, I got to tell you, this is all his fault, okay? Mm-hmm. I love you, but Bruce doesn't. It's that simple. Well, you know, I've been ready to go, you know, and you've been gallivanting around America. Then you've been getting a job, you know, and then you've been rebuilding your computer while I've been sitting here, folks, endeavoring to be loyal to all our listeners. So I'm going to blame anybody, mate. You blame the man who started this whole thing, okay? Blame the host, not the guest.
The tough part has been for us to coordinate recording times now that I'm working a full-time 5-day-a-week gig because, yeah, I mean, we always recorded on a weekday during the day, and, of course, now I can't do that. It's just thrown our recording schedule out the window.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to find another schedule because it would appear that by popular demand, we're still loved, you know. Although the emails haven't been coming as thick and fast as we would like.
No. I noticed
such
that.
Such is the fleeting nature of fame, my friend.
Our 15 minutes is up.
That's our 15 minutes. Thank you, Andy Warhol. Our 15 minutes is up. No, we still have some listeners out there in the world. I can think of Graham and Mark and Richard. And I promised I wasn't going to mention Richard Annable on this podcast. Looks like I just did, so don't! And you know, our Dave Elfring, and we still have a few
Bob
others.
Bob Fisher.
Bob, good on you, Bob. You know, but the old Shutters Inc. Flickr site's getting a little slow, and so head back there, people. We hope that we our absence hasn't prevented you from taking pictures.
Mm.
You know, that would be a terrible thing, but I mean, look, it's okay. I mean, everybody's busy. I am flat out this week.
Right.
Absolutely. Flat to the boards because it's in Australia. It's the week when we do our annual photographic industry expo,
right?
And so I've got to head up to Brisbane Thursday evening for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the expo, where I've got to run the magazine stand, a Total Image magazine stand.
Yep,
I've got to see all the new products. I've got to speak. I've got to lecture a few times. I've got to moderate an evening for retail for the Photo Marketing Association. I've got to sign autographs, of course. I have my picture taken with a celebrity, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Have heaps of gorgeous babes hanging off you.
Yeah, just until the wife. She'll be there. Yeah. But, we're going to have a lot of fun. Going to have a lot of fun. And I get to catch up with all the new stuff and see all the new cameras and, you know, all the latest offerings from Olympus and Sony, Canon, Nikon. Speaking of which, I got to tell you, I ran a photography weekend workshop over the weekend.
Yep,
it's my People Photography workshop, kindly organised by Camera House here in Australia by Croydon Camera House and Camera Action in the city. There's a blatant plug, and one of the guys brought from his store, one of the retailers who came to the workshop, Dean. Yeah. Hello, Dean, if you're listening, brought a D3 for me to use for the day.
Right.
On D3, the 35mm full size, Canon would say, size sensor with the 12-megapixel CMOS sensor. And it was the cruelest thing he could have done. Just cruelest thing he could have done.
But you've got your D300 now, haven't you?
No, I haven't yet. I'll be looking to organize that very soon. I'm still working on my beaten and battered old D200.
Okay.
But you know what? I mean, I'm organizing a deal with Nikon.
Right.
Because, you know, I am Shelton Muller. Yeah. You know, I mean, think they just give me one with a nice little bow on it, you know. But I'm rethinking it. After shooting with the D3, I've never seen images that come out of a camera so pure. I mean, these are just JPEGs that come out of a camera so pure. Wow. And I mean, the raw files, I mean, they're 70 megabyte raw files.
Whoa.
But the JPEGs are just beautiful, you know? And,
yeah,
and,
right.
I've posted one up on my Flickr site.
Right.
As an example, and on my blog, you can have a look at pretty much a JPEG straight out of the camera. I haven't touched it other than resized it for the blog and for Flickr.
Yeah.
But absolutely beautiful. The flesh tones, the sharpness, the dynamic range, the tonal range. Just gorgeous. I've never seen images come out of a camera so beautiful in my life.
This is a big call coming from the man who said that the Fuji S3 was a serious contender for the Nikon stuff.
Oh, it was at the time. It's different too.
Because I recall, that was your main thing about the Fuji was mm-hmm. just their beautiful colors.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But I think the D3 leaves that for dead in terms of.
Wow.
For the first time, I feel I've seen that. The white balance, I think, on the D3 is spectacular and is better than the S5, in my opinion.
Right.
And that makes a lot of difference.
Sorry, the S5, not the S3, yeah.
And it makes a lot of difference, you know, white balance. If you're just working on, say, auto white balance or whatever, I chose my white balances during the day, but the white balance on it is just excellent. And as a result, and I was photographing people, of course, two lovely girls,
yep.
Soph and Melissa.
Yep.
And the skin tones are just spectacular on this thing. But it's more than that. It's just the whole look and feel of the image is so much, you know, like, say, a color negative printed. It's just gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous. So I don't know. I might go to Nikon with a new plan.
It would be interesting to get your thoughts on or to give you a D300 and a D3 and then hear your thoughts between the two.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a feeling that Nikon will be releasing, you know, I don't know how long it will take. It may not be that far away. What's an enthusiast version of the D3. In other words,
right.
A D300 or D200 yep. style or area of pricing, but with the FX size sensor. So it'll have the same sense maybe as the D3, but without, you know, some of the features of the D3.
Okay.
I know basically they did that with the D2 and the, you know, the D2X when they brought out the D200, it was essentially, you know, people said, well, why did I spend all that money on the D2X and the D, you know, when this camera comes out and it's fantastic,
right.
Which at the it was, and, you know, there's no question about that. I have a feeling I wouldn't be at all surprised if Nikon opt to go that line, but I'm just talking off the top of my head. It would make sense that they do something like that. But, you know, who knows? We shall see.
Wow.
But the D3, if you want to have a look at an image of Soph, the model I photographed, just go to my blog and or my Flickr site, and you have a look, because it is just absolutely, absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
I've been learning much from my own workshops. It's interesting when you run a workshop, because you realize, and I might have said this before, it's been so long since we recorded our last one, I can't remember what I've said and what I haven't, but you realize that you don't know what people don't know until you start to teach them.
Yeah.
And it really is quite incredible. And the, you know, what I thought was a simple motto, and I know we discussed this in our last podcast, but if you want to, Bruce, I wouldn't mind just talking about it a little bit more.
Sure.
That is this whole find the light and put him in it philosophy, which has become a bit of a motto.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm glad that it has. I'm glad that that's what's caught on. But I've realized that, as I said again, even in my last podcast, there's a lot more to it than that. And it's very easy to rattle off that saying. But then to watch people try to put it into practice is very interesting as you stand back.
Right.
And the place here in Eltham, Victoria, called Mont Salvat, which is an old artist community where I run my photography workshops. And if you're going to use a place to, say, find the light and put them in it, this is the place. It has so many opportunities for indoor and outdoor light of different types that you just, you couldn't dream, you couldn't think of a better place. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I stand back and I watch, and in the morning I do a 1.5-hour-ish sort of prac session.
Yeah.
With PowerPoint and, you know, talking about the principles of people photography, depth of field, composition, find the light and put them in it, that kind of thing, and posing and all those things. And then we go out and we do it. And we've spent the morning talking, and I talk a lot about light. Then we have a lunch break. Our models arrive. Everybody gets their cameras together. And then we do a, you know, 2-3-hour prac session in the afternoon. And it's a whole lot of fun, and everybody, you know, gets great photographs. It's interesting when you set up a photograph and then you show people, look, this is how you work this spot. This is how you work this light. This is why you get the model to pose for this place, for this light. And then everybody just gathers around and bang, 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 bang. They're all trying to get the photograph. And I have to actually keep stopping them and saying, now, hang on, folks. Don't make this, you know, a free-for-all photo fest. Make sure that you are taking away, you're learning something from this, and not just say, hey, this is a great opportunity for a photograph. And then, so after a while of doing that, I then say, okay, gang, I want someone from the group to find the light and put her in it. You know, grab the model, and I'm just going to leave this over to you now. And it's interesting, and they have to do that. If you don't let them do that, they go away thinking, oh, well, Shelton set up some awesome photos for us, but will they be able to replicate that situation themselves? And that's the thing that I want them to take home. I want them to go, and the next time they're photographing somebody, you know, they'll find the light and put them in it. And more than that, they'll know what to do in that situation. So I stand back and I watch. And naturally, of course, I expect that everyone will have the same experience as myself. Or, you know, because they're not as old as me, maybe, or been taking pictures as long. Although I find most of the people who come are my age or older, I'd say.
Right.
Which is interesting. But I watch, and then I say, look, you know, have you thought about this, and have you thought about that? And eventually it boils down to these things. And that is, you know, where, first of all, is the light? We find the light and we put them in it. So where is the light? You stand in a place and you look. And I did this the other day, and it's funny, Richard was right there with me, Richard Annable. Hello, Richard. I promised I wouldn't mention you. But he's become a permanent fixture, you know, on my elbow. You know, anyone would think we were coming out together. You know, he came to the workshop, and I said to the gang, I pointed up, you know, I said, who wants to take control? Somebody volunteered, and I said, okay, take Melissa and find the light and put her in it. What's the shot you want to create? Where is the light for that? And how you do it. And he actually did it. But he had to stop and think, you know, rather than just relying on me, he had to stop and think. And he looked at the landscape, which by this time was lit by this beautiful late afternoon light. He looked at the landscape, and he looked for a patch of light that would give him the effect that he wanted. It's good. He's learned lesson number one. He's found the light for the effect that he wants. But lesson number two is, what do you do when you get your model in that light? So he's found it, put her in it. Okay. But what kind of light is it? Now, we were talking about late afternoon light. You can, just the most gorgeous winter golden late afternoon light. It was absolutely beautiful. And to his credit, he said, well, what I want to do is do what you did earlier, and that's rim lighter. What I'd been showing people is how you can use the same kind of light for, you know, a nice side lid or 45-degree angle portrait, say a window light. And then how you can turn that around, shoot from the other side, and use it as rim lighting, you know, the kind of lighting that outlines the subject. Model from the drop, you know. And even then, people were getting that all wrong, because I said, look, you've got a black backdrop. Make sure you position yourself so that Soph is against this dark backdrop and she's rim lit against it. We had to get a reflector in underneath it. So, you know, there were some who were getting it and some who weren't.
Sorry. Just back up. How are you rim lighting someone if there's a backdrop behind them?
Well, we were upstairs at Montsalvat in a place called The Loft. Now, every Melbourne photographer knows this place.
Right.
It's the loft in the main gallery at Montsalvat. Now, imagine an attic, which has a sloped roof either side,
right,
which is all dark wood. But on the roof, on one of these angled, you know, roofs, is a frosted window.
Okay.
you've got like a beautiful studio situation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yep.
So what we did is we used that to show, I had Soph stand in that light in various ways. I had her move into the window with her face, then away from the window with her face, with and without reflector, also that we could show what was happening with the light. Now, when she moved her face into the light, you know, it was, I pointed out that, you know, the light would fall across her face in such a way that you would see shape and form and texture. And all she would have to do, and Soph was just fantastic at this, this is... Soph is www.sophonline, sophonline.com, mm-hmm. if you want to know the model I'm talking about. She's fantastic, lovely girl, and great personality, real cheeky personality, which keeps the afternoon interesting. And there's a picture on Flickr of me hauling her over my shoulder, if you want to look for that. Because I picked her up fireman style and threw her over my shoulder and carried her to where the light was. Anyway, that's another story. But you know, it was funny because Soph would move just a little bit and the whole light on her face would change. So you had to, and because she was trying to, you know, keep the variety up, she was actually moving a fair bit. And I had to say, look, Soph, just hold it there. And she would turn in a slight angle toward the window and the light would fall beautifully across her face, give you an absolutely perfect rendition in terms of, you know, two dimensions, what her three-dimensional reality was. But then we turned that around, and I said, look, everybody come around this side of Soph. And we moved around the other side, where we were now standing, you know, in the opposite direction. And the window light, the light coming through that window was now her rim light. And she was in the front of her was it was dark. But there were people photographing her with the window as the backdrop. So they were missing the whole point of the rim lighting. And with the window as the backdrop, she would have just been a silhouette.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, that's fine if that's what you want to do. But have a look. If you come around this way, you're getting the rim lighting. And looking back into the loft or into this attic, you've got all that dark wood. Now you're going to expose for her face, which will automatically you know, brighten everything because there's more light on her face than the backdrop. So you'll have this beautiful black darkness in which her face will appear. Mm-hmm. The great thing about it was that she was also wearing a high turtleneck sort of dress, like one-piece sort of dress type thing with long black sleeves, and her face just really stands out in this situation. So it was a really great lesson in that, but it taught me to teach that it's not only a matter of putting them in the light, but then what do you do when you've got them in it? And so I had to formulate questions for them. For instance, where is the light? Okay, bingo, we've got that. Same with outside, like I was just saying. He found this light, got the model, but then what kind of light is it? Well, that will determine really what you do next. If it's hard light, and we did an exercise in this really hard light that was just bouncing off one of the buildings, just hitting it full bore. And I said to the gang, I said, look, you'd never ever think of putting a model in that kind of light, but let's do it. Now, this was interesting because I put Soph again and in this light where this hard late afternoon light wasn't soft, it was pretty hard. It was nice and golden, but it was pretty hard. And it was just bashing down on this white plaster wall of one of the old buildings there. And I said, okay, Soph, just lean against that and let the light hit you. Now, Soph is a great dramatic model. So I just said, okay, Soph, this is really, you know, hard, punchy studio light. Imagine it that way. Now, you know, give me some attitude. Give me something funky in your pose. And she really worked it. Hmm. And I had to do that because if I had tried to create a soft portrait using that kind of light, it wouldn't have worked. But then turning her away from that light and letting the white light bounce off the white building, the golden light bounce off the white building, and then having her rimlit with the backlight just by moving her around and moving around the other side, she changed completely. Her attitude, her facial expression, her pose all needed to change in order to match the light. So the light itself dictates the nature or emotion of the shot. And that was something that we needed to teach. You can use hard light, but you have to make sure that, you know, you're not trying to create something that the light disagrees with.
Mm.
So the light's mood has to match, or be congruent with the mood of the light that you are, you know, or the mood of the image that you're working with.
I would imagine that anyone listening to this podcast right now, you know, and I include myself in that, something like that is something that you can hear, but you're never really going to get that until you've shot it at 100 times for yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of real world experience that you as a working professional photographer have gained from, you know, 20 odd years of doing what you do. But you would really have to practice that a lot to know when to ask your model to, you know, give you a different attitude to deal with the light that you're working in.
Yeah, fair enough point. I suppose after a while it just becomes something, you know, like driving. You know, you say to yourself, did I check the lights then? Was it green? You know, just drive through the intersection, don't you? And you don't, you know, you don't think about what you do. You end up at your destination without really having consciously
thought. You're on autopilot,
you are, and that's sort of the way it is. But I think, like you say, without practicing it, you'd never learn. But if nobody tells you to start practicing, you don't know what to look for.
For sure.
And it was interesting to see these little lights going on in the eyes of people saying, "Oh, look at that!" You'd have to have been there, admittedly, because I look at the situation and I immediately go, "Oh, look at the way the light's doing that! It's bouncing back off this white." Oh, okay, good, Melissa, can you just turn your face into that light, pose this way, bang, 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 and I had it done. But at least those who were on my workshop could see what I did, and I explained why I did it, when I did it, so that they could understand the principle of it. So now, like you say, even though they're not going to maybe master this for some time, maybe they will, I don't know, I hope they do, at least they know now that they can start practicing it. You know, if they hadn't seen it in action, if no one had told them, they may not have ever picked it up for themselves. And this is my point. I don't really often know what people don't know until I start to teach. You know what I mean? I don't mean to sound demeaning.
No. I understand exactly what you're saying.
It's that I needed to learn, and these epiphanies came to me by various forms. And after a while, you start, because you go into autopilot, you start to take it a little for granted, maybe, or you just see it as something that is just natural. You know, doesn't everybody do this?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So you need to ask, you know, you find the light, you put them in it, then, you know, what kind of light is that? And that will dictate the nature of the picture in many ways. How does that light strike you emotionally? You know, is it hard? Is it soft? Is it bright? Is it moody? Is it, you know, low contrast, high contrast? Is it colorful? You know, those kinds of things, they will all, you know, and I'll tell you what I'll do, Bruce. I'll upload some picture, or I'll send them to you to upload to Audio to you. And I will send you different photographs taken, you know, with the bride standing standing in, and Melissa standing in, you know, a few feet of each other in terms of the photograph, you know, one photograph just a couple of feet from the other, but with the photographer moving around, with me moving around and working the light differently. And you'll see how you can use the same light to create completely different kinds of portraits.
Okay.
And I'll send them to you so that you can see exactly what I'm talking about. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're going, gee, I wish I knew what that guy was going on about, go to audiotoyou.com and have a look at, you know, the photographs that I send Bruce to see why, with just turning away from and into the light, completely different attitude was, you know, created, and another opportunity for a photograph was created. So if you were doing... Yeah, sorry, go on.
One thing I might ask when you send those through, if you could just jot down in the email some basic information about, you know, what you did to set those shots up, like you've done when you've posted on Flickr. I've seen that you sometimes, you know, you've got the camera and the lens and the aperture and the shutter speed and, you know, and just, you know, some brief notes on, you know, why you chose a particular, not necessarily, you know, shutter speed and aperture, because I think we already understand that, but understanding, you know, angles or filters or anything else that made the shot what it was.
Okay. All right. I can do that. And maybe that will, you know, for each picture, you'll be able to see exactly what I'm talking about. But the whole opportunities that are created by one source of light, one place, just by changing, my point is that you've found the light and put them in it, but there's so many opportunities therein just by simply moving yourself in that position to create the kind of image that you've pre-visualized. So here you are. Okay, so we found the light, we've got the model in it, we've understood what kind of light it is. So now the next question is, where do I put myself, as I was saying in our last podcast, in relationship to the model, now that we're here, right?
Yep.
But there's no right or wrong answer to that necessarily. I mean, there may be a wrong, but there are no absolute rights. But what I found in watching my group was that I would sort of place the model in the situation, and the photographers would position themselves in and around me in their, you know, in their enthusiasm to get the photograph.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't. I would say to them, and I'd be talking. Look, I'd say, to be honest with you, I have positioned Soph here in this way because if you stand where I'm standing, you get this beautiful lighting effect with her in the backdrop, and if you expose for this and la la la, and nobody was listening, or, you know, well, I shouldn't say nobody. There were a few people who weren't listening. They'd say, oh, this is fantastic, and they were off to my left, off to my right, bang bang bang, up down, you know, low perspective. Yeah. But I'd set it up so that if you stood where I was, now I'm not saying that I'm the absolute right here, I'm just saying that this is what I'd established to teach this particular technique. They weren't all I'd seen was I'd put the model, posed her nicely, put her in the light, and that was all that they needed. But for me, there was more.
Yeah.
There was the next part. What is the most advantageous place to put yourself, you know, in relationship to the subject and the light?
Do you think some of that might come down to the fact that the people who've attended your workshop have never had the opportunity to be in a great venue with great light and a stunning looking model, and so to them anything looks like a great photo?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, right. Working with professional models is something we don't get to do every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can understand the enthusiasm. So I don't blame them. By all means, get as many shots as you can. But, you know, come here and see it from here.
Yeah.
And I would then step out of the way and then just watch them work and take their photographs. And I would be, you know, I would be picking out. I'm very good at remembering names. So, you know, I can remember 12, 13 people's names in a group. And I'd say, look, you know, such and such, such and such. Do you really believe that's the best angle to shoot from? Come around here and look at it from here. And they go, and so they do it. And, you know, they just go, oh, wow, look at that. You know, they don't, the first part, they understand. The second part of where, now that I've got the model nicely posed, beautifully dressed, she looks fantastic. She's in the beautiful light. But the second part is, where do I put myself? So that the light is actually working its magic as it's intended to do on this model, because that can only really be achieved in this way, right here, right now, pretty much from one place. You know, you've got a little bit of movement, you know, opportunity. But if you go right round to the left or right round to the right, the light is going to be striking her completely different. Not only that, but it'll be profile, not full on, or it'll be 45 degrees, or, you know, her angle to the camera will be completely different. And I think, like you say, they were a little carried away with, oh, look at this beautiful girl, look at this beautiful light, look at this beautiful venue. I don't get this every day.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard, by the way, to hire models. A lot of models are available on a TFP or TFCD basis,
yep,
which is time for prints or time for CD, and they're happy to do it. So it's not necessarily always, you know, not an issue to do. But I really just want people to know, you know, what this light is for and where you should be now in relationship to that. And then there's the third part, and that is how the model, particularly if you're doing a face portrait or something waist or three quarter or, you know, 50, you know, sort of head and shoulders or whatever, how do you get the model's face to interact with your lens and the light? So there's a few things there to think about. But if we don't start thinking about them, and if we just settle for where we're standing at the time, you just never learn the lesson. So, you know, what I really want to sort of, I suppose, encourage you all to do now is, let's move on from find the light and put them in it, because I think we can do that. I really do. But now it's okay, we found the light and put them in it. What do I do now? Let's get the nuances of that correct, because it really is all about the relationships, as I was saying in the last podcast. Where the light is, where the person is, where I am, what is behind the person, how that light is striking that person in relationship to where I'm standing. Does that person need to change the pose, or do I need to change my position? If that person does change the pose, what happens to the way the light strikes his or her face? Is it now halfway in the shade, half in the light? Should I turn? Should I get them to turn a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right so that, you know, we get more idea of shape, dimension, form, texture, etc. on the face? Think about those things, because they are the ways, that's the way that you really, really work the light so that, you know, it does a lot more than you could ever possibly think that it would. In that is the lesson. You know, the great photographers of our time have really understood that. I must admit, I am now starting to understand that this is a great, a lifelong lesson, and I'm only myself just beginning to really see it, you know, and really start to work it. If you go to the Camera House Photography Workshops Flickr site, you'll be able to see you'll be able to see how different photographers have done exactly what I've just said they've done. You'll see like the same shot done by different photographers, but you know, not necessarily all on the best angles, because that's what they've had to learn on the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a good lesson. It's a really good lesson to learn. If indeed you have comment on this, let me know. But I'd really love to see hear some of your comments on how this thought affects you, whether you've really consciously thought about it before, and what you're going to do from here on in. We've often talked about, you know, simple things like using the window, you know, using a window light, opening a door, you know, that kind of thing. But what I've learned is in teaching people is the things that I do subconsciously. For instance, just get the model to turn, you know, 45 degree angle into the light and look at you with her eyes. So her nose is pointing away from the camera at a 45 degree angle, but her eyes are looking at you. Now what that does is make sure that the light spills beautifully across her face, gives a shadow on the dark side of the nose and on the dark side of the face. But which, of course, is all about, you know, finding out the real shape and form of the face, but the eyes connect with you. If you turn the face straight onto the camera, then you're going to lose a lot of that shape and form from that particular source of light. All those little things that I used to just take for granted and do without even thinking. I would just, for some reason, subconsciously ask the model to turn in this direction or that direction, knowing that that would happen, but not really stopping and saying to myself, why have I done this? It just became, you know, it just became autopilot after a while. Yeah. Now that I'm teaching these things more regularly, I realize, you know, that these are things that people don't know.
Yeah. But it forces you to stop and actually think about why you do it.
Why I do it, and, yeah, and where did I learn this, you know? And also that I need to stop and not take too much for granted, go through the process bit by bit so that people can go, oh, look at that, that's really cool. All he did was get her to turn to the left, but look at the difference. And I have to point this out to people and say, now look, she's looking at me, I've got half her face in the dark, half her face in the light. A lot of people are happy with that until, you know, because they don't know what, you know, what you're going to do. And then you say, look, Soph, would you just turn a little bit across your left shoulder? Just there, right, good, stop, whoa. Now don't move a muscle, just move only your eyes and look back at me. And then she does. And I say, okay, don't move a muscle, Soph. I want everybody to stand in line behind me, right from here, and get your lenses out and get this shot. This is what I want you to learn. You can take it any other way you want to after that.
Yeah.
You know, but get this shot,
yeah,
because this is the lesson to be learned. And if you take this shot home and you use it as a reference point, you'll know to do this next time because it works.
Yeah.
It's so simple. Like all things, they're simple when you know them.
Yeah.
But it's getting to know them first. And it's been a real lesson for me to, not in the actual doing, but in the teaching, you know, to realize that these things, the slightest nuance of a pose can be so important in how the light interacts with that person. If you want to extend that, and we can talk about this in another podcast, just let me know if this interests you guys. But if you want to extend that into flash, because flash, you can put the light wherever you damn well please. So, you know, you can make it do whatever you want it to do in a mixture of flash and ambient, you know, exposure balances and things like that. You can knock people's socks off, you know, with how you manipulate light using off-camera flash. So think of that as just an extension of this discussion. It really is endless. But if you get the principles, then it'll just, like it does for me now, I must admit, it just happens. And you don't really think about it all that much. You just bang.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound egotistical, because I'm really crap at a lot of other things. But after a while, this just becomes second nature. If you understand the principles, and from this point on, start practicing those little things.
Yeah, I think that's the key.
Yep. And if you don't know to do it, you won't do it. So yeah. Start doing it. I'll upload these photos. I'll send them to you as JPEGs, Bruce, and then throw them on the site, and then, you know, you can see what I'm talking about. Now, should we finish off with a few emails from people, or have you?
Please,
go for it. Well, I haven't got many, and so I'm really complaining, guys. I'll tell you what, we don't do a weekly podcast, and suddenly we're not your friends anymore. that really hurts, you know? That really hurts. All right. Dave Zach. Now, Dave, gped@gmail.com. I'm sorry, I should have answered your email a little earlier than this, because you've probably gone and shot the wedding by now. But I'll just say, Shelton, I enjoy your podcast very much. I did not realize how lonely you were during the break. I would have emailed you sooner. Thank you, Dave. I have my first wedding job, as in I am actually getting paid job, this Friday. So sorry, Dave. It's been a bit busy around here, mate. It's going to be an outside wedding, small party held at the Bolt Castle. Lots of photo ops. I'm going to remember, find the light and put them in it. Don't be shy. Be the professional. Dress for the occasion. Be creative. Bring your camera. Damn, I am a nervous wreck. In other words, he's quoting all the things we talked about in our wedding podcast. It's funny how many great comments we got from doing that wedding series. I can't believe that. That's been a lot of people said how much they've got these podcasts, set them aside, and every time they do a wedding, they just get them out and have a listen. And I'm so honored that you do that. Thank you so much for that. He says, I always shoot raw and fine. I'll be bringing my 12-24, my 28, my 105 VR, and my 51-8. Sorry, no 85-1.8 yet. That's okay. Your 105 is just fine, mate. I will have an SB800 with me, a small tripod to mount it on, along with a flash bracket. I'm also bringing my N90S film camera to shoot black and white as well. I only hope to have my D80 set correctly. I should cheese out and leave it on auto. That's girlfriend mode. But what fun would that be? Yeah, it's no fun at all, Dave, really. Take control of that baby. I usually shoot aperture priority anyhow. Well, that's fine. It's fair enough. I just want to make sure my pictures have some punch. I was going to set it for black and white. Then I would have black and white JPEGs with a color RAW. Any last-minute pointers or camera settings I should look at? The bride will be wearing a red dress. Kind of weird, but hey, why not? I keep hearing about how darn great that D300 is, but I need to master my D80, or do I? I have an ND4 filter. Not sure if I should pick up anything else to assist me in capturing good photos. It looks like you've got that thing pretty well sorted out anyway, Dave. By now you've shot the thing, so sorry I'm a little late, but I think you're pretty well on track. I don't know about setting my JPEGs for black and white, because I think I'd prefer to do that myself.
Yeah.
I know you'll have a color RAW to work with, but let's say your JPEG turns out really good. I mean, you get it right in camera, and so it should. You should be able to print a JPEG straight out of the camera if you've done it right. So I wouldn't necessarily do that in future. It's easy enough to change a black and white or JPEG to a nice black and white in a Photoshop action, or a couple of different Photoshop actions. So I wouldn't
Plus, you've got a lot more flexibility on how the color is converted to black and white if you do it in post.
That's exactly right. Absolutely right. You know, so I think I would just avoid that mode. That's just me, talking, but I would shoot everything in color, and then you've got it there if you need to. As for the D300, it is a gorgeous camera. Images out of that thing are spectacular. They really are. I think you've pretty well got that set up, mate, and I'd love to see some of your photographs, actually. If you can send them to us here at Shutters Inc., that would be fantastic. He says, yes, I do plan on getting over to your 5-minute photographer site. It's on my list. Well, I haven't seen you there yet, Dave. Hey, do you use Apple or PC? Well, at the moment I use a PC, but that may change. Just curious. I'm bringing a laptop with me also so I can download images off camera to verify that I have a backup. If you do decide to come to the States for a workshop, do it on the East Coast, New York, Maine. Yes, I'd love to. That would be so awesome. Okay, now. Oh, you've got a Flickr site there. I can look at your pictures. All right, I will, Dave. I will. Now, as for my American workshops, there's a company here, the Camera Action in Melbourne, have contacts in America, and they are thinking of setting up a series of workshops for me to do overseas in the United States. If indeed it worked, we would do it. Absolutely do it. So I'll keep you posted on that front. If we can get the people, trust me. If we can build it, I will come, because I could think of nothing more fun. I absolutely love doing photography workshops. I love the teaching, and I love writing seeing the little lights go on in people's minds and eyes. So I could think of nothing more honored. I would be more honored to do than come to the United States and meet some of you guys and run some workshops across the country. See how we go. Mm. We'll see how. Now, here's another one from Mark Loader from Perth. G'day, Mark. How you going? All the way over there in the West. Dear Tigger, Bokeh, or whoever. I didn't know Bokeh was a nickname I had, but yeah, there you go. I'm back. My right
fuzzy-headed leader.
Yes, fuzzy-headed leader. What? I'm back. This is now, Mark, I'm sorry, I have to say this, mate. If I read your email wrong, it's because your punctuation is shocking, mate. Okay, so here we go. I'm back. My right index finger knuckle reconstruction was a success, and I'm ready to go. Yes, I'm feeling much better. Thanks for asking. How are you, Mark, by the way? Now, in the name of God, Nikon, and the Geelong Football Club, who the heck is giving you these ghastly nicknames? I would have got back to you sooner about this, but as you know, I have been carrying a serious injury, which has prevented me from rushing to your aid. But, as Paul Rogers once sang, it's all right now. Good on you. You know, anybody, I've got a Paul Rogers concert on DVD. God, that guy can still sing.
Yeah.
Anyway, henceforth, you shall be known as Nails Muller. How are all those young brides you photograph going to be happy with their lot after they've met the Nailer? Oh, Mark. Hey, there's a line there. Ain't gonna use it. Anyway, now that that's sorted, it's really good to have you and Bruce back on air. We did miss you. Well, it's nice to know somebody, flame it, did. Don't miss us. We need our regular fix, you know. And we're not addicts, we're users. Hey, I even enjoyed the series on wedding photography. You actually made it sound rewarding and even fun. I've heard stories from other photographers who make the experience sound like they may have preferred to swim naked with box jellyfish. One recent article which caught my eye was the editorial in Camera magazine. That's an Australian photography magazine. Very good one. This is the current issue, and it was written by Paul Burrows. G'day, Paul, if you're listening. Paul's a friend of ours, fellow editor, whom you may know. Yes, I do know Paul well. He wrote about the proliferation of photoshopped images and the simple but noble art of getting it right in camera. And so he should. It's a great idea, a great theory, and something that's really been lost in this day and age, I think, especially by the neophyte photographer, someone new to the photography arena. To them, everything, you know, mate, I think a lot of photographers now think that our images have to be completed in the computer. But no, he wrote an excellent editorial on that. I remember reading it. Mark goes on to say, I love great images, but just about everyone I see published seems to have been post-processed. What chance does someone who doesn't post-process have of winning or even getting a place in a competition? Read the article if you can. I'd love to hear your views on the issue. And remember, I'm out there sharing the love. Mark. We got to meet, Mark. It's simple as that.
Oh, mate. I think so.
We've got to meet. We've got to do a shoot together or something.
Well, I'm going to be over there in September, October, actually. So
really?
Yeah.
Well, you and Mark have got to get together, hire a beautiful young model and take some photographs.
Well, I'm going to be there for a wedding.
Oh,
I'm in the bridal party, so.
You're the what, best man?
No, just in the bridal party.
Not the bridesmaid, are you?
No.
I have been to weddings where the chief bridesmaid has been a bloke.
Okay.
Yeah, because he happened to, and he wasn't gay or anything like that. He was, you know, he was a bloke,
right.
But he happened to be the bride's best friend.
Yeah. There's a movie that's just come out about that called Maid of Honor.
Oh, really?
Maid, as in M-A-D-E, with Patrick Dempsey.
That's right. Yes. I've seen it. Another one of those
romantic comedies.
Romantic comedies, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to your question, Mark, what chance does someone have of winning a competition? I think it depends on the competition. There are excellent competitions, especially photojournalist competitions, whereby the image is minimal post-processing. And so, you know, that would certainly give you a chance. In the Australian photo arena, a lot of the, if not all, of the winning images each year are photoshopped, some to a heavy degree. And that has had to become the accepted art form simply because of the old argument, well, you know, we used to do things in the darkroom, a la Ansel Adams, you know, to alter photographs dramatically. Why can't we do it now? There are certain rules in certain categories of competition, but in a lot of cases, those rules are pretty flexible. But I know that there are some competitions where you just can't, you know, like in nature competitions, that kind of thing, you just cannot touch the image other than maybe sharpening, you know, white point, black point, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, you alter something, like you remove part of the landscape or an element within it or something like that, and you get caught doing something like that and you're out of the competition and, you know, all that kind of thing. So there are places whereby competitions can be held and you can enter them and your image straight out of the camera is honored because of it straight out of the camera. But these days we do live in the 21st century. We do live in a digital age, and that whole process has now become par for the course for so many photographers, including yours truly. I produce an image to the degree possible in camera. And then if I want to do something more because that's what I felt like doing when I took the picture, that's the way I saw it or whatever, I will. I'm really not going to put myself in a box, you know, to prevent my image being what it can be just because of some mythical or mystical ethic that some people stick to. I don't want to do that. I like an end product to be what I've intended it to be. I'm sure you do too. But, you know, let's not be afraid of that process. But I agree with Paul. I absolutely agree with Paul that images should be created to the degree possible, according to your pre-visualization, to the degree possible, because we're limited here by the camera's technology, to create that image in camera. I really absolutely agree with that. And that should be every photographer's aim, because it's the capture process, and that should be the case. But and if that's where it stops, that's where it stops. Like I said, I've got an image up on my Flickr site of Soph straight out of the D3, and it's lovely. There are things I could do to it, but Soph actually asked for the image without any processing, and she's right. It's quite nice just straight out of the camera. So I have no problem with that at all, Mark. I will handle that argument from both sides, but a lot depends on the context into which the photograph is going to be seen, and it's as simple as that. So that's, I think they're the only two emails I can think of actually receiving recently based on Shutters Inc. So I really like to, you know, encourage you to keep it up, gang. And, you know, now that we're going to be back on air again, right, Bruce?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, we'll do our best, gang. We'll do our best. you know, we'd really like to keep hearing from you. And there's a few of you down at 5minutephotographer.com. Thank you very much. It's nice to have you there. And, you know, I'll keep plugging the old website as we keep building it and keep building, you know, the 5 minute family down there. Now, Bruce, you're a member down there.
Yes.
Where have you been, son? Where have you been?
Mate.
I'm going to publicly humiliate you on this podcast. I know you can edit this out if you want.
I won't edit it out. But had you been reading audio2u.com,
You
would have seen my post last week,
yes,
where I mentioned having had these components sitting in a cardboard box on the floor here in my studio for 3 weeks. Well, it was 2 weeks at the time, but it's been 3 weeks, waiting to rebuild my computer. And I had not even had time to do that. And anyone who's been listening to my podcast long enough knows how much of a computer geek I am and how much I've, you know, give me a chance to rebuild a computer and I'm there, baby, you know. and life has just been so crazy since I got back from the US that I'd not even had a chance to do that.
Mm.
And I seriously, the amount of time that I have had to surf the net in the, you know, 4 or 5 weeks it's been since I got back from the US has been so minimal. It's just been crazy. I've had virtually no time on the net at all. So, and that's why I haven't been there. It's not that I, you know, don't want to or, you know, feel I don't need to or anything, because I do need to, but I just haven't had the time. Yeah. And I will get there eventually. Just dragging my heels.
Oh, well. So. All right. Look, everybody who's a 5-minute member will, you know, who knows you will want to see you there. So, and there's some great stuff happening on the forum.
Cool.
You know, so just come on down and, you know, you're a member. You may as well come on down and yep. be a part of it. And, you know, have you been doing any photography recently, mate?
No, matey. I have not had the camera out of its bag since I got back from the States.
Okay, Shutter's Inc. I'm going to have to send Bruce some emails. He cycles 180 kilometers a week.
I do.
All right? And hasn't taken a single photograph in that entire time. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. That's just absolutely shocking. But you're getting very fit, but, you know, the eye is getting out of tune, Bruce. Yeah, so you're going to have to take that camera with you.
Yep. Well, it's Kath's 40th birthday this week.
She's going to love you for telling everyone your age.
Oh, well, it's my 40th in October, so what the hell.
You got an older woman going on.
Yeah.
Yeah?
By 5 months, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So we're having a party on Saturday night, so the camera will be coming out then. So.
Yes, but that snaps.
Yeah, it is.
You're such a creative guy, Bruce. But I know life gets in the way. It really does. Hey, I'm a photographer, and there are times I go for a couple of weeks without having taken a single photograph almost, you know.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like, mate. Absolutely. But you know what we'd love to see down at 5-Minute Photographer is some of your American photographs within the forums.
Okay.
But anyway, when you get a chance, come on down and have a look and be part of the gang, as indeed you're all welcome to be. So it's really, really good down there. There's a nice little family spirit. The thing I like about, and a lot of people have said about the 5-Minute Photographer forum, is that it's not a public forum because the site is a paid site.
Yep.
You don't get a lot of, you know, flaming and spamming. Yep. And you know, we all, you know, and of course I take care of the site, and if anybody was to get out of line, you know, on the site, I'd just delete that. You know, I'm sorry, I won't allow it.
Yeah.
There are certain things I will and will not allow on the forum, and any harsh judgments, you know, with insults attached, that kind of thing. But you know what, haven't had a single incident on the 5-Minute Photographer forum of that yet.
Excellent.
Where people have been cruel or, you know, called anybody a name. And you see these things on forums sometimes. Like, who the heck are you to talk to somebody like that?
Yeah.
Just because you can't see them face to face. You know, you call them names or tell them their photographs are crap or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that won't happen down there. But we've got some really cool stuff going on. So come on down, Bruce. Check it out when you get a chance.
I will do that, matey.
And anybody else, of course, is welcome.
Excellent. Oh,
well, that's about us, I think, isn't it, mate?
Yep. You know, I don't know if I mentioned it, but when I was at NAB in Vegas and Daryl Gungadu came along, he had just got his, well, at least I think he'd only just got it, his D300. Mm-hmm. And, it's a nice piece of gear.
It is a lovely
feels
camera.
Really nice in the hands, and, you know, some of the shots that he took while he was in Utah were just fantastic and around Nevada and whatnot. So, yeah.
Well, if you're listening, Daryl, you left an impression on Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I'm sure you are. So
I'm sure he won't be too impressed to hear you saying that you're looking at the D3 from Canon instead of the D300.
The D3 from Nikon.
Sorry, what you were talking earlier in the podcast about?
The D3. It's a Nikon.
Oh, sorry.
Yep.
I completely misunderstood. I was thinking it was a bit strange that you were suddenly raving about a Canon.
Oh, no.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm not going to rush off to the dark side that quickly.
No, I didn't. I was going to question you at the time. Okay, all right. So I'm completely confused. Just ignore me. I'll get back under my rock.
You won't hear this little black duck going, I am your father, Luke. We're not rushing to the dark side that quickly, my friends.
No, okay.
No.
All right.
Nothing against the Canon gear. Awesome gear. But I got Nikon lenses, so,
well, that's what I figured. So,
tell you what, speaking of Nikon lenses, I've got a new one for everybody as part of what Graham Anderson refers to as lens lust. And I've told you about this lens on a podcast before, but it's my 180 2.8 AF Nikkor.
Yeah.
I love this lens. Oh, man. I mean, I still love my 85.
You love every bloody lens.
No, not necessarily. This 180, especially on the D3. Oh, The focal length and the bouquet and the just gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous.
Okay, so, we'll leave you to lust after your lenses.
Yeah, I'm just spitting and salivating all over my microphone here.
Beautiful. Thank you, mate.
It's a glass. Thank you. Nice to talk to you again, Bruce. And absolutely. Nice to catch all our Shutters Inc. fraternity.
Definitely.
Well, it's a sorority too. There are some girls out there, and we welcome you. You know, Holly, are you still there? By the way, let me know if you are. You're one of the few girls I know, and Heather. I don't think we have too many listeners out there of the gentler sex. So, you know, let us know that you're still there, would you? If you're listening to this podcast, Holly. If you're listening to this podcast, Heather. Send us an email. Say, yeah, we listen. All right, I'd really like to know that you're there.
Excellent. All right, mate.
All right. Good on
we'll,
you.
We'll try and talk with you next week.
You bet. You okay. bet. Take care, mate. See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.